What I'd like to do is pull you back together. We'd like to hear what you came up with in terms of the worst kinds of statements that you have heard people say. You can use those microphones as you would like. And one of the things I'm going to do is when you say this, there's A through G down there. I'm going to kind of fill in the blanks. And what oftentimes happens is people come up with new ones or ones that are not down there. And A through G are the ones that we researched as being the top seven. So give me an example of one of the worst things that you heard somebody say to a suffering person. Yes?
We have down, I know exactly how you feel. Well, you can't know exactly how someone feels because you're not them.
Okay, that first one. And let me just say that. A, actually, in my notes is, I know how you feel. As a matter of fact, when we started out the research, we had not even thought of this, and it kept coming up over and over and over again. Now, there's only one thing worse than saying, I know how you feel, and that is saying, I know just how you feel. And what's worse than saying, I know just how you feel, is say, I know exactly how you feel. So why don't you share one more with us? Yes.
I've suffered more than you have.
I've suffered more than you have. Whoa. That's good. I mean, that's a good idea. I mean, that's a good suggestion. Yeah, you don't want to do that. A friend of mine, and this is a kind of a loose story. I'll disguise it a little bit. Let's say he lost his father, and he was in a car wash waiting for the car, his car, along with somebody else's car. And somebody just said to him or something, I don't know why the subject, and my friend, you know, talked about his losing his father. And one, and the person said, well, I lost a dog once. Here's another one, and I'll tell you, this is a tricky one. This summer, it was late summer, and about 4 a.m, somebody was driving one of those riding lawnmowers down my street. I could hear it coming way in the distance, and it went very slowly all the way down. And I woke up at 4, and that was pretty much it for the night. Found out later that it was one of those, they were killing bugs. I was wondering, what was that? Got into work, and one of my colleagues started saying, yeah, I was up in the middle of the night, and I'll disguise this a little bit. He had some kind of a physical thing in terms of, it wasn't acid reflux or wasn't like that, but it was actually a physical kind of an issue. I didn't say to him, and I want to tell you, I thought it, but I didn't say it to him. I didn't say to him, you know, I woke up at 4 too. Because I woke up at 4 because of some bug sprayer. He woke up at 4 is something that actually took him to the hospital, took him, you know, to seek medical attention. You got to be careful about that. Okay, yes.
Why is God punishing you?
I don't know.
It's Bildad and Eliphaz.
I don't know, but, you know, God is going to punish you for saying that. Watch it. Why is God punishing you? Yeah, that's a pretty bad one. That's not on there either. Look, if I can jump over here, would you mind? If we can jump over the other microphone here.
Sure. One of the gentlemen in our group heard someone who once said to someone who had lost twins, at least you still have the other baby when one died.
Yes, at least you still had the other baby. That is, that's number D.
Really?
At least. Yeah. The words at least are never good to say. Never. Absolutely never. The way I think about those, it's okay to think it, but you can't say it. Shortly after Joan died, a friend of mine called, and he said, I'm sorry about Joan dying. How long were you married? And I told him, 33 years, 4 months, 19 days, 3 hours, and 37 minutes. And he said, I'm really sorry. And then he said, my wife died of ovarian cancer as well. He said, we were married for 64 years. Thankfully, I knew enough to say, not to say, right? At least you had 64 years. Mm-hmm. 64 years, when you lose your wife after 64 years of ovarian cancer, is not long enough. When you lose a father or a mother who's 80 or 90 or even over 100, it's not long enough. Right? Okay, so that's the at least. Which side are we at here? Or do you want maybe have another person try here, and then we can... Yes.
It's not that bad.
It's not that bad. That's kind of like E. E down there is you should / shouldn't. You shouldn't feel that way. It's not that bad. Okay? Yes.
We just had an 18-year-old that we buried, and somebody in the visitation line right in front of our senior pastor said to the parents, well, I guess this was God's will.
Yes, that's not good either. That is G. It's God's will. In those we researched, 91% of the people did not like it when people said to them, it's God's will.
Because it's not.
That's another issue, yes. Yeah, right. When something is not theologically accurate, that's a problem. Yes.
This is probably similar to one you had before, but we said it could be worse.
It could be worse.
Is that different or the same as what you had?
No, it's maybe it's even different. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Other you, please come up. It could be worse is another dastardly thing. Yes.
People being overly directive or trying to be helpful when the help is not wanted.
Yes, yes. And that's kind of like E, you should or shouldn't. Yeah, Chuck.
Tomorrow you'll feel better.
Tomorrow you'll feel better. Yes. That's another one. That's just kind of glossing over. Yes.
Get over it.
Get over it. Yeah. I would put C, I've got down here, keep a stiff upper lip. Get over it. Keep a stiff upper lip. And I'm going to touch on that in a moment, too. Yes?
We had somebody in our group who said they knew a woman who lost a son to a heart attack, and apparently the pastor or somebody said to them, what God gives, God takes away.
Yeah, all right. Okay.
Fast-forwarding your grief process, minimizing it, saying, hey, it's been 6 weeks, it's been a year.
Oh, yeah, so. Yeah. And when you associate with people who have lost loved ones, and I have done this in various support groups, and people have said, how long has it been since Joan died? And they would ask me that several years ago, and I'd say about a year. And they would say, oh, that's not a long time at all. If you've been through it, you know that a year is not a long time. Or it may not be a long time. Let me give you two other ones. B, it's for the best. Now, if the person himself, him or herself says, it's for the best, that's okay. And you might want to say to that person, well, maybe so, but it's still tough. Or it's still difficult. And then F, the biggie, the F and G are theological ones. F is God doesn't give you any more than you can handle. 88% of the people did not like that. God doesn't give you any more than you can handle. What's wrong with that? Well, it doesn't match up psychologically. And what else is wrong with that is that is really it's not only a misinterpretation, it's a mistranslation of 1 Corinthians 10:13. It talks about temptation. Paul was railing pretty strongly in 1 Corinthians about temptation. And so God doesn't give you any more than you can handle is absolutely nowhere in the Bible. Now, maybe you can look at slide 4. This is another one that I got a job writing sympathy cards. How nice. Those are very important. Read me one. I hear that you've lost someone, dear. Shake it off and have a beer. Hope it's not too touchy-feely. Sounds like some of the caring that I shouldn't. I've got a couple of my classmates are here that some of the things that I would have said when I was in school. Let's go on to number three, everyone is unique. Let me ask you this question. How many of you believe that everyone is unique? Okay. How many of you have ever had back pain? How many of you haven't? You're lucky. How many of you have had back pain briefly? Long enough to know what it is, right? So if you have never had, or you never have, or you don't have back pain, it is really something else. Am I right? It is something that it's almost like it's qualitatively different. And there's a really good book by Teresa Rando, R-A-N-D-O. It's one of the best books on grief that I know of. Do you know, Nanette, the title of that? Teresa Rando. It's something like How to Go On Living When Someone You Love Dies. She says in chapter 4 at the beginning, "It is a mistake to lump all bereaved individuals together. It is equally incorrect to assume that although two individuals lose the same person, they each have experienced the same loss. Each is a different person. While it is very true that there are a number of universal elements in a grief experience, it is equally true that they will be experienced in very individualistic ways, depending on the psychological, social, and physical factors which influence your response to the death of a loved one. And then she says, notice that at any point there are 29 separate categories acting together to affect your grief. So everybody is unique in terms of grieving as well. I want to tell you about Nuisance the Cat. John Kaler, one of my assistants and a good friend, had this cat named Nuisance. And Nuisance was not doing well physically, and John took her over to the vet, and they had to euthanize his cat. And this is Joel Brecher's memo to me. Joel is on our staff. He said, "I was just talking to John about his loss, and he mentioned that as he left the animal hospital, the receptionist told him, quote, 'Don't forget, there are lots of homeless animals out there that need homes.' Needless to say, it came off as quite uncaring to John." It's kind of like saying to somebody who has lost a child, "Well, you're young, you can have another child." Now, John, he waited a couple months, he got another cat, and so on. Let's look at some cultural and media influences on suffering. And I think the culture and media does some really bad things with regard to suffering. A year ago, there was in the Personality Parade in the Parade magazine, the question and answer thing at the beginning. The question had to do with the whereabouts and the health of movie icon Deborah Kerr. And the answer, Deborah is very frail because she's very old, but remains in good spirits. I'm thinking to myself, what is this thing about good spirits? There's another one. Greta Weitz, a marathoner, has cancer. The article says, she is in excellent spirits. Again, and by the way, the whole thing about, so what that is saying to you and me is if we have a loved one who gets cancer or whatever happens, we always have to be in good spirits. And there's something wrong with us if we're not in good spirits. Here's another one. Marvella Bayh, Senator Birch Bayh's wife, got cancer at age 39. I was reading about it or hearing it on TV, whatever. Quote, she never let it get her down. Well, I don't know. I've known a few people who have had cancer and who have even died of cancer, and they do let it get them down. Have you run into anybody who's let cancer get them down? I mean, you know, it's something that gets you down. But there was a good one. More recently in this Parade magazine Q&A, they were asking about June Allison. And she is remarried. Her husband, Dr. David Ashrow, he says she's been, quote, and I think this is good, a bit under the weather lately. That's okay. You know, a bit under the weather lately. You know, she's probably not doing too well. And if you are an Arnold Palmer fan like I am, and I even saw him in person once, you know, Arnold Palmer had prostate cancer. And here's what he says in an article in Coping magazine. He said, quote, "Certainly it's a shock to be told that you have cancer." That's, you know, Arnie did some pretty good things, and that's right on, you know. And I have read things who have said, "I wasn't shocked, I didn't back, you know, I wasn't sad for a minute. I just decided to live my life," and, you know, okay, well, at least Arnie was shocked. You know, and if Arnie can be shocked, I think any of us can be shocked. All right. I would like to say this. 99% of individuals who are sharing their suffering are not whining. I don't like whining. I want to just tell you this. And here's a sign that I used to have in my office, and then I decided I needed to put something else up. Anybody know what Kvengeln Verboten means? I could have said nicht Kvengeln. What does it mean? Whining forbidden. So I'm not a big fan of whining, but I do want to say that 99% of people, when they are suffering and they are expressing their suffering, are not whining. Parade Magazine. I guess you know what I do with my Sundays, read Parade Magazine, but cover week ago Sunday, they talk about four-time Grammy winner Olivia Newton-John. This four-time Grammy winner didn't let breast cancer slow her down, not for a second. Well, actually, she doesn't say this in the article. I don't know. I've known a number of people who have breast cancer, and that slowed them down, you know. I didn't know this. Olivia Newton-John's grandfather won a Nobel Prize. Her father, on the other side of the family, was head of King's College in Cambridge, on and on and on. She's had breast cancer for 13 years. I've known people who have not had breast cancer for 13 years, and it did let him get her down. And I think this is all, again, it's part of the whole media thing. I read this, and I decided to put together a little statement, and I decided to put it on a card. And those of you, would you like to pass these out? And I just wanted to share this with you. And it's if you just want to pass these cards out. And I thought I'd put it on a card. And this card says, "Suffering people should be able to feel and express their pain without shame." Suffering people should be able to feel and express their pain without shame. And if you take one of them, and if you want more, we've got extra ones up here. You could grab them afterwards. Where Nietzsche isn't peachy. Did any of you ever see a 1960s bumper sticker? I saw this just once, I think, that said, "Nietzsche is peachy." Anybody remember that? Well, anyway. Oh, you do. Okay, good. I would like to say that, I'm not going to argue that. He may have been peachy. But he did say one thing that wasn't so peachy. And if you want to show that next as well. The next slide. "Was mich nicht umbringt, macht mich stärker." What does that mean? What doesn't kill me makes me stronger. That is a great statement to people who are athletes in their early 20s, and they do not have an irreparable injury. But to those who cannot recover from it, that makes a big difference. In your handout, on the second last page, as a matter of fact, page 5, no, that's not the, that's the third last page, page 5, was speaking to a bunch of funeral directors, and Rabbi Earl Grohlman was one of the speakers. And we were having dinner one evening, and Earl said to me, he said, "What do you think is the worst kind of grief?" And I said, "I don't know." And I guessed at this and that, loss of a child, whatever. And he said, "No. The worst kind of grief is your own grief." You know, think about that. And so I wrote a few of these things. What's the worst kind of cancer? it's your own cancer, or the cancer that a loved one has. What's the worst kind of evil? The evil that's done against you, emotional pain. What's the worst kind of job to be downsized from? The job that you were downsized from, and so on and so on. Here's another category of questions, and this is a little bit different. What is the worst kind of sports injury? Now, obviously, your own injury. It's the sports injury that you can't come back from. What's the worst kind of rejection letter? You know, I heard that Charles Dickens got all these rejection letters from A Tale of Two Cities. Then he got an acceptance letter. The worst kind of rejection letter is that which is not followed by an acceptance letter. Worst kind of disaster to be caught in? It's the disaster that you can't recover from. Worst kind of family problems? The kind that does irreparable damage. And there are differences. So those who have had experience that they have recovered from, it makes a big difference. And I think that, you know, I told you about that 88% of the people did not like, God didn't give you more than you can handle, and 91% did not like, it's God's will. I think that the 9% and the 12% of the people who actually like these are the people who came back from whatever it was. You can say it's God's will. You know, are you any of you Cardinal fans? Yeah. Rick Ankiel, is he in the majors yet? I mean, the poor guy, he was a great pitcher. He has not come back from there. You know, I'm thinking that maybe Rick Ankiel, and babe, by the way, he is a phenomenal hitter. I remember when he was a pitcher watching him hit, and I was saying, this guy's a good hitter. Maybe if he comes back next year, plays right field, and hits 780 home runs in his career, then he can look back and say, you know, it was God's will. If he doesn't come back, it's going to be a lot harder to say that. I'd like to look forward at, maybe move a slide ahead. I want to share with you some. Was thinking about that. You know, there's writing a book titled A Theology of Suffering for Healthy Upper Middle Class Individuals Who Are Preferably Good Looking. How about the next slide? A Theology of Suffering for Professional Athletes Who Have Had a Career-Threatening Injury, or who have taken a trip to the minor leagues that they have come back from, who are now in the major leagues and are making $10 million a year. How about the next one? A Theology of Suffering for Those Who Have Come Out Smelling Like a Rose. And I think the next one is my colleague, Bill McKay, A Theology of Suffering for People Who Aren't. It's a difference in terms of your own perspectives. Now, we have about 3 or 4 minutes for any questions that you might have. And I'm kind of skipping around here on some material that I do a lot. You learn what not to say, what do you say? I want to share this with you. You've just heard that a friend has been diagnosed with a serious illness. You want to support your friend, but you can't imagine what you're going to say. Tempting as it is to avoid a visit, you know you can't allow yourself to do that. You call and make arrangements to see your friend. You ring the bell and your friend opens the door. Okay, what do you say? The person has something terrible has happened to them. Let me give you like 5 things that you can say, kind of in order. The first thing you say is hello. The second thing you say, it's good to see you. Third thing, touch. Touch them on the shoulder, shake their hand, hug them, whatever is appropriate to the relationship. D, fill me in on what's been happening. E, I'm sorry. And I'd like to underscore E, I'm sorry. Boy, you can't go wrong with that. Lady came up to me at a Stephen Series Leaders training course recently, and she said, I want to just say I'm sorry about losing your wife and everything. And she said, I lost my husband 17 years ago. I said, I'm really sorry about your loss. And she received that. And let me just tell you about John and Kayler, my friend, and Nuisance the cat. We had a dog named Maynard. Did you get a chance to meet Maynard, Chris? All right. Chris has worked a little bit over at my house. And Maynard was, at 17 years old, he was not moving well. He went up and down stairs and did something. I let him out in the morning. In the evening, I came back, and he was in his dog bed, and the kitchen smelled, and he had urinated and defecated in it. And I said, Maynard, kind of get up and let's go outside. He just couldn't do that. Helped him up. He walked. He leaned against the wall and so on. And so I called the vet the next day. We already had an appointment for him on Saturday, and the vet said, bring him in. So they needed to euthanize Maynard in July. And I'll tell you, those people at the Banfield Veterinary Hospital over here in St. Louis were phenomenal. They were saying, I'm sorry. I want to tell you another thing, too. The vet who had cared for Maynard for a number of years, he had tears in his eyes. Whoa. Here is one thing I have changed over the years. 30 years ago, when we put together this defense series for the first time, I guess we put it together only once, I thought you had to really be a lot more cool and dispassionate than you are now, that I think of now. You know, obviously, you can't break down. You know, you hear of these horror stories where the caregiver breaks down and everybody has to care for the caregiver. But I would say this to pastors and myself. In many circumstances, not just in certain circumstances, in many circumstances, I think it's all right to cry. And it's for sure it's all right to have tears in your eyes. Bite the side of your mouth and don't fall totally apart if somebody needs you to kind of carry the ball for a while. But it's all right to cry. Because it's real, and they'll just think it's just wonderful. We've covered how to relate to those who are suffering. You have a little packet I just wanted to mention. There's describing a book called Don't Sing Songs to a Heavy Heart. A lot of the stuff I did was in addition to the book, a little overlap about what we did. There's Journeying Through Grief, which is talks about some little things that little books to send to grieving people at 3 months, three weeks, 3 months, 6 months, and 11 months after a loved one dies. How many of you have seen Don't Sing Songs to a Heavy Heart or use them or anything? Okay. And then there's I think the biggest thing is the Breakthrough Leadership Conference that's going to be offered next October, a year from this October, a 5-day leadership conference that we have been putting together for the past year at Stephen Ministries, and this is going to be for people who want to learn leadership and really get phenomenal results. So that's in your packet. It's great to have all of you here today. Thank you for the great questions and your brainstorming and everything, and have a good rest of the conference.